Hello, welcome back. Thank you for joining us for episode 28, which is chapter 7 of the Bhagavad Gita in the series entitled Gita Decoded. Sister Denise has been sharing her insight and wisdom and years of experience into the practice of spirituality and her understanding of this magnificent scripture. Sister Denise, it's great to see you once again.
Thank you.
I see that in chapter 7, God continues to educate Arjuna on what meditation is, on what yoga is, etc. And what interests me is that on page 3, he says to Arjuna, "Of thousands of men, scarcely anyone strives for perfection. Even of the striving and the perfected, scarcely anyone knows me in truth." That is mind-boggling. And it's very clear that many strive, but few succeed. What is the message here?
I think the first thing is that striving for perfection is quite difficult for a person to think about, because perfection is very different from perfectionism.
Okay.
You know, perfectionism is a kind of an extreme, where you figure out a list of all the good things and say, you know, if you're that to an extreme degree, you're perfect. But actually, perfection is balance. You know, we spoke earlier about these very fine balances, and this is what one has to strive for. You have sometimes said, well, this looks really difficult, this looks impossible. But that kind of fine-tuned balance is very refined. But who is going to go for that is somebody who's not going to be satisfied with almost. They want to be right there. The second thing is, in the shloka number 3 of the 7th book, which we also hear very much in the studies that we work with within Brahma Kumari's Raj Yoga, is no one knows me as I am and what I am. First of all, because people assume God is some sort of extension of a human being, as I mentioned before, the anthropomorphization of God. Alternatively, you have people who say God is an all-pervading energy, and because it's all-pervading, of course it's difficult to grasp. And if it's really all-pervading, then I'm part of it, so can I grasp something that's either me or not me? It becomes really very difficult in terms of focus. Now God is saying to us, I am higher than a human. It is said God is only one, the Supreme Soul, the one who is the father of all souls, the teacher of all souls, the guru of all souls, the one who knows, the Almighty. There are so many descriptions of God, but yet the being of God is incorporeal. And when God manifests himself by taking an avatar, coming into a human body, so that the soul of that body has to sit on one side, while the incorporeal Supreme Being looks through the eyes, talks through the mouth, behaves through the body, and reveals the sanskaras that are contained within the incorporeal being of light. You see, this is very difficult for people to grasp. And what we understand in Brahma Kumaris is that Brahma Baba is this selected being in the last of his many, many births, who had come all the way from the highest person of all to a simple person, and then becomes the incognito vehicle of the incognito Supreme Being, That is very difficult to see because you can't see it with these eyes. I think it's actually too difficult for a person to figure out.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, I think that. I think that God, you know, it's very often said, you know, God will be pleased with someone. And I think that if a person is sincerely wanting to know God, wanting to understand God and reach God, God will and God can kind of open up the clouds and part the dimension of matter and allow you to see, to comprehend. I mean, one of the things that is said about God is the bestower of divine vision, or Divya Drishti. The whole aspect of visions. So God has the key to the visionary experiences, and it mentioned in an earlier chapter that we looked at that God will reveal himself to someone according to how that person relates to God. So if you are lucky enough to relate to God in the way that I don't know who you are, but I want to know who you are, and I don't know what you look like, but I want to see you, and I will do anything to come to you. God, who is also called the Innocent Lord, you know, Bhola Nath, will open up this veil, and then you can see a glimpse. And that glimpse is enough for you to say, okay, yes, this is it. Now I know. I've seen a glimpse. I know where to go. And then you can just keep going. This, I think, is a blessing that you can get from God. And then you study, you strive, you move forward. And then I think that you can see God, you can feel God, you can be with God, God will be with you, and you are led forward.
Sister Denise, that was exquisite. What touched me about what you just said is that if a soul sincerely loves God, even though he, she may be ignorant, uneducated, in a lot of pain and turmoil, irrespective of where they may be at in their lives, as long as you're sincere in your conversation with God, the two souls will gravitate towards each other and meet.
Yes.
Oh. Okay, I think we're done here. Maybe we should go home now. That is so special. No, it's just so just. Feeling the love and the joy. Can you feel the love and the joy? This is so lovely. Okay, so let's go through some words, shall we? Verse 4. The elements are mentioned. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, wind, mind and intellect also. And egoism, this, my material nature is divided into 8 parts. My material nature, capital M, but it's the beginning of a line. So what does that mean? I was given to understand, Sister Denise, that this is the Samkhya categories.
I think what we've got here is a description of the interface between matter, and then you see something which is in between matter and the soul. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, these are the 5 elements of matter, so that's physical matter. Now, mind, intellect, and ahankar is described as egoism, but there's should ahankar and ashud ahankar, the pure and the impure sense of self. In Brahma Kumaris, we talk about sanskaras as being the configuration of individual traits that distinguish this individual from any other individual, which I think is congruent with the idea of ego in that sense. Now, all of these eight are considered material. Now, in Brahma Kumari's Raj Yoga, we would say that the mind, intellect, sanskaras are the subtle organs of the soul. The body is the physical organs of the soul. So here, where the my is capitalized, and again, I think this would go in with the idea of the omnipresence of God, but if you consider it in this other way, that the self-realized person, the person who's operating from the higher self, the stage of soul consciousness, they are the masters of their subtle organs, mind, intellect, ego, or sanskaras, and their physical body, then you have something that you can really make sense of.
Sister Denise, I now want to take you through to verse 6, which reads, "All creatures have their birth in this, my highest nature. Understand this, I am the origin and also the dissolution of the entire universe." What does this mean?
The way I look at this one is connected with the way that God acts. So in our understanding in Brahma Kumaris, we hear about Brahma, Vishnu, Shankar. You see this badge I have. On the reverse side is the image of the Trimurti. And this image represents how God acts, because God doesn't act directly. God acts via instruments. And so it is said in our teachings, God is the creator. In conventional Hinduism, Brahma is called the creator. But we feel that incorporeal God, Shiva, is doing the act of creation by giving the information that is there in the Gita that we're studying through the instrument of Brahma. And this then is the origin. The dissolution of the entire universe, we look at that as the instrument for dissolution or destruction, Shankar. And the image of Shankar that we have is, here is a man, male form, completely naked, with the long hair indicating the state of renunciation of a sannyasi, and completely naked refers also to this quite well-known phrase that a soul, you know, you come naked and alone, and you have to leave naked and alone. So here again, the idea of solitude being important. So the dissolution of everything has to be done through letting go of everything. So nakedness means you make yourself bodiless. And so in the yoga...
Sister Denise, I'm going to interrupt you there. Define bodilessness, please. It's not a common concept.
Bodiless means that you, with your thought, with your understanding, you separate yourself mentally from your body. And also bodiless refers to egoless. So your sense of self, your sense of identity and everything is called ahankar, which was mentioned earlier, ego, ahankar. So you have the ego of the S with a little s, that's ashud ahankar, impure arrogance or impure ego. And then with big S, the pure ego. You understand yourself as you really are in your pure state. And so bodilessness means to let go of all of that. Now, along with the origin and the dissolution, you have the sustenance. And so we work with the figure of Vishnu, who is the sustainer. And if you look at the Gita, you will see that, okay, the person of Krishna is also considered as the person of Vishnu, which is the sustainer. So on the one hand, you have Krishna, the friendly friend of Arjuna, who they can sit together in the chariot having a conversation about this, but that the real nature of Krishna is something else, the supreme God, you see, which is really the incorporeal one, whom we call Shiva. And then the way that the creation is sustained is the accumulation of the wisdom and the practice of yoga, which enables a person, a perfected person, a great person, to you know, give durability to the creation. And so the way I see it is that at this particular time, the cusp between the cycles, incorporeal God manifests himself in a loving, most attractive way, where we would not be scared to death and run away, but we would come close and listen. And then gradually he kind of fills into his child, his student, his follower, everything that he knows, and all of his powers, all of his virtues. And then when you absorb that, this then takes you or gives you enough strength to persist for a next cycle of reincarnations.
Wow. That's
How I interpret this one.
You got all of that out of one shloka. Isn't that amazing? Okay, so dare I ask you a next question? This is Denise. In light of what you just said, please could you tell the viewer how you interpret verse 8? And I must admit, I don't get it. I am the liquidity in the waters, Arjuna. I am the radiance in the moon and the sun, the sacred syllable, Om, in all the Vedas, the sound in the air, and the manhood in men. From what I understood from your previous sharing, that there's three energies. There's soul, there's Mother Nature, and there's God. And now, this. So, please explain.
When you want to meditate, when you want to engage with God as a yogi, you want to be in yoga with God all the time. Now, that's not practical. So there is a method that is used. Every second of time, or every moment, you can say, your experience, your perception of what is going on is going to vary with whatever is happening, right? So the soul perceives the ocean and is reminded of the oceanic qualities of God. The soul perceives the moon and is reminded of another aspect of God. The soul relates to the essential meaning of the Vedas, Om, Om meaning, the way we understand it, I am, you know. So God says, I exist, and you say, I exist. I exist, you exist, we exist, and you kind of go on to another level of perception where you become aware how extraordinary it is. Your a sense of perception of, not perception through the sense organs, but your perception of the meaning of what you perceive through the sense organs takes on the poetic quality, the symbolic quality. And I understand this verse to refer to this practice that we do, which really keeps you focused on God. So everything you perceive contains within it a possibility of the mind returning to God. So the mind is aware of the ocean, but the ocean reminds you of God, so it takes you to God. The mind is aware of the moon, and it reminds you of all of the changes, light to dark, and so on, the processes of reincarnation that he explains to you, it takes you back to him. Now, this is a very poetic and symbolic a verse, but this is how I use it.
Yeah. Sister Denise, your interpretation is refreshingly different from what I thought you would say and from what I read in the verse. So, God is not saying that he's in all of this. And the reason I'm asking is that one of God's titles is that he's the director, the drama of life.
He's the director of the drama of life, he's the creator of the universe, but you know, the creator and the creation, they're two different things. But if you want to understand the creator, look at the creation.
Ah, yes. You know what came to mind as I read this particular shloka? That for many people, they need a sign of the existence of God before actually engaging with God.
Yeah.
Okay? So if you see something miraculous in nature, I know someone, whenever she wants to feel close to God, she takes a drive to the ocean and stares at the ocean, and then she says, I feel closer to God when I'm sitting near the ocean.
Well, of course, because of the symbolic value, and because, you know, there isn't anything limited about the ocean, and it's so mysterious, and it's so extraordinary, and so powerful, and it just reminds you of God as you continue to look at it, and then you realize, you know, God is the creator, the creation is causing your mind to connect with the creator by its very nature. So I think that, you know, the whole thing ties in, you see, the creator and the creation. It's a whole, you can say.
W-H-O-L-E?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Threw me off that track there for a bit.
A totality.
Okay. Okay, Sister Denise, I think that we'll call it a day for now. But what I appreciated about today's episode is that you were able to extract a meaning from the Bhagavad Gita, which the average person cannot see, does not see. And you see, we're inclined to take the words off a page and interpret it literally. And many forget that this is a metaphor, an allegory. And I think it's something that one has to remind oneself again and again and again. And it has to do something with the beholder, in the way, I suppose, in the way we interpret.
Oh, definitely, definitely. The thing is that because of the study that I do with the Brahma Kumaris and the form of Raj Yoga that I practice, all of this is like a key that opens up a deeper meaning in the Gita. And we do speak of our study as the Gita knowledge, you know. And then when you look at the way that we receive the information and the way the Gita is written, and you see how it completely connects, but yet you have a key that enables you to interpret in such a way that ultimately you do come closer and closer to God. You're able to become closer and closer to a state of being perfect, and further away from your dark side, you can say. Or not necessarily further away, but you can manage it.
Thank you for sharing that, Sister Denise. Viewers, we have to say goodbye to you right now. We've come to chapter 7, and we've got to just about halfway of this chapter, and we will meet you again in the next episode, where we will take up
the rest of chapter 7. And I hope you have taken a little something from today's episode, in which Sister Denise has encapsulated her understanding of the Bhagavad Gita to us. So thank you so much for joining us, and goodbye.